Some people believe that President Biden's domestic agenda, not including immigration, is relatively progressive and that he should be the clear choice for left-leaning voters in this year's presidential election, which looks like it will be a contest between Biden and former President Donald Trump. But critics of the two-party system don't necessarily see things that way. Laura Wells is with the Green Party of California. She spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg.
As you look at the presidential campaign as it's unfolding between Biden and Trump, what do you see there? What are your impressions?
I'm afraid I see what a lot of people see, which is nobody wanted these two people for the race in 2024 to be the same two people that were there in 2020 and who have done such disappointing things during each of their four-year terms as president. Nobody wanted this. I mean, I can't say nobody.
Although some people, when they look at the Biden administration, they see that he's tried to pass a lot of what they would consider progressive or moderately progressive legislation on climate, you know, helping families and children. Some people credit him with the low unemployment numbers and the creation of jobs. I don't know if that's really fair. You know, presidents get credit and blame for the creation of jobs. I don't know how much they have to do with it. But at any rate, some people see him as relatively progressive compared to, say, the previous three Democratic presidents. What do you make of that?
I think that at this point, and I know people want to talk about Biden's domestic property, his domestic plans, and they don't want to talk about foreign policy. But at this point, people are becoming more and more conscious and aware of the fact that the money that is spent on the military for military operations across the world in different continents are hurting them. That part of the reason that their children are having less opportunity than they themselves had, and they didn't have enough, but that their children have less opportunity for earning money, for going to college, for having good lives, for living on their own, for raising families, you know, all of those things, that they are connecting the values that both the Democratic and the Republican parties put on military and war. That's not lost on them. So that when they see Biden trying, whatever the words that you may have used, that he tried to do this, he said he would do this, he wanted to do this, and he didn't do it, and the prior Democratic parties, presidential parties, didn't do it either, then they, the Democratic presidents, didn't do it either, then they're like, okay, what shall we do? We've been told that there are only two parties that you can vote for. And so what do they do if they go, well, Democrats didn't do it, Obama didn't do it, you know, Biden didn't do it, my kids are still in debt if they've gone to college or they have fewer hopes of going to college.
So then the argument is he can't do it himself. You know, he's got opposition.
Yeah, well, my favorite answer to that was when Obama got elected. It went from, I watched the progression of what people said. They said, oh, well, he'll never get elected. They'll never let him live. So he got elected. And they said, well, even if he gets elected, he won't by himself be able to do it unless he gets a majority in both houses of Congress. Okay. People gave him that. He got majority in both houses of Congress. And then people were saying, well, you know, having the majority is not enough. You need to have filibuster proof. Guess what? He had filibuster proof. He had, at the very beginning, 60%. This is President Obama in 2008. 60% in both houses of Congress. He brought in something called affordable health care, Obamacare. Again, the progression. So he has 60% in both houses to start out with. He only needs 51 to get this thing passed. We will have a robust public option. Well, okay, so we'll have a public
option. But he doesn't have enough progressive Democrats.
Right. It blames his own party in this case. Do you know, it's like, well, they're really, they come from these conservative states and all of that stuff. But nevertheless, he had enough to pass it. The Progressive Caucus said they would not pass it without a public option, because it went from, oh, some kind of public option to, a weak public option, but at least a public option, so that the private insurance, hospital, medical, drug companies would have competition, you know, good old American competition. And he dropped that, and the Progressive Caucus folded, except for one person who had to be taken up in the presidential jet and sweet-talked by Obama.
Dennis Kucinich.
Dennis Kucinich. Yeah. And then he folded, you know, but so that even...
Because they don't want the Republicans to win. They feel like they have no choice.
Yeah, well, so there we are. When somebody had everything possible in order to raise the United States of America up from being the worst healthcare system of all of the wealthy, industrialized, developed countries. The worst. It went from the worst to the worst, but it was better than it was before. So people see that, and then they see that their kids can't go to college. They see that they can't take vacations. Do you know? And then they go, okay, well, polls showed that it wasn't about when Hillary Clinton lost to Trump, that it was just that they were so discouraged by the 8 years of Obama and the years before that, that they thought, okay, well, let's try this guy. He's an outsider. He's telling it like it is. He's
Although she did win the popular vote.
Yeah, but she didn't take the presidency.
Right.
And why is that? There's been so much Democratic Party power in this country for so long. Why has that electoral college remained in place, giving the presidency to both Bush in 2000 and Trump in 2016? Why does that still exist? It's on a long list of things that there's no excuse for. And another thing, and this goes back to Obama as well, when he had all that power. People that are very interested in a woman's right to choose what happens with her body and birth and pregnancy, they go to Obama and they say, hey, let's get this, take this out of the hands of the Supreme Court, pass legislation. He said, it's not a priority. And it was also not a priority for Obama, again, to nominate, to put somebody on the Supreme Court. He had a year. But why did he not do that? We all know this, right? It was the Republicans' fault that he didn't do that, right?
Well, are you talking about when he nominated Merrick Garland and the Republicans?
Yeah, well, when he had a Supreme Court vacancy to fill and he didn't get it done. And people say, well, Mitch McConnell or something wouldn't let him do it. It's like, well, wait, who was the president? And...
Well, Congress does have to approve, right?
But let me ask you, is Obama an eloquent speaker or not?
Sure he is, yeah.
Sure he is. Why didn't he take his case to the American people? Why didn't he talk to people and say, look,
did he not say anything at all? I mean,
I don't think that he did not say anything at all, but he didn't say enough. He didn't get it done. He had a year.
So you think he should have put as much energy into that as he did into campaigning? That would have been very persuasive.
That would have been a good campaign piece.
Yeah.
Look how the Republicans play. This is not something that is fair and square. You know, they are doing dirty tricks or, you know, whatever. But then people might not have gone, oh, well, we tried him, we'll try him. It's like, no, those guys are even worse. But he didn't make that case at all.
So he didn't take advantage of his position and his ability to articulate issues, you're saying?
Right. And it wasn't like he didn't have those things. He had the bully pulpit. He had people on his side. He has the skills, the talent, the gifts of speaking. Why not speak to the people? So then, you know, then we come up to 2024 and we've had 4 years of Biden. Did the minimum wage come up? No, he was going to do that. Did he get rid of student loans? He nipped at it, you know, sort of a little nip and tuck, but he didn't get that done. I think he blamed the Republicans on that as well. But the big, big picture in the United States, and I think people are starting to get the big picture, as I mentioned, one of the big pictures is the money that's going toward the military and war and defense and homeland security and the FBI and the prisons and the police is taking money out of the opportunities for people's children and themselves, you know, to take vacations, to have an enjoyable, meaningful life. And so the big picture is that there is no excuse, no excuse. And people are taking these excuses less and less. No excuse for the richest country the world has ever known to have the worst healthcare system of all the other wealthy industrialized countries. There's no excuse for other countries to be able to give their young people higher education free. If the young person takes the responsibility and does what they need to do in college, they don't have to pay for it, you know, especially for decades afterward. Other countries manage to do that. Other countries that even aren't on that list of wealthy countries give their people health care, give their people free education. If the young people or the old people, you know, do the work, they get the education. There's no excuse for that. There's no excuse for there being homeless people, for people not having a roof over their heads. Other countries have solved that problem. There is no excuse for the U.S. not to do it. And people are getting tired of the excuses, I think.
Well, there seems to be a real reluctance to learn from other countries in general. The U.S. wants to do it its own way.
And the values. I learned as a very young child that how do you know what somebody's values are? Where do they put their money? What are our values? Military, not health, not education.
So in the Green Party campaign, you would expect that what you just said will be put out there by Cornel West or whoever the candidate is.
Right, yeah.
And to what extent do you think that message will get out? What sort of access would a Green Party candidate have on a national level? I mean, it seems like Ralph Nader had a good shot because of his name recognition.
Mm-hmm.
But what about now?
Well, now that things have closed down, even Nader would be getting less airtime on the mainstream outlets, you know, whether it's radio, TV, newspaper, on internet, you know, whatever. The attack is one of making you invisible. You know, the tactic is to make you absolutely invisible.
Although the No Labels Party has gotten some publicity because they're kind of more mainstream and they have people like Joel Lieberman there that the media likes to talk to.
Yeah, well, and the Green Party has been around for 30 years, 32 years, actually, and for 32 years, they've been trying to kill us. Because
yeah. And you're on the ballot. You're all across the country, right?
All across the country. We're actually, the Green Party is international, you know, and so it's hard to kill us. And plus, it's hard to kill a political party that has the values of justice and peace and the environment and a real democracy and does not take corporate money, which means we do not take billionaire money, which means that they're not our boss. The two Titanic parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, the huge cruise ships, they have a boss. Who's your boss? The person gives you the money. The person that pays, that signs your paycheck.
I suppose you could say, we'll take your money, but screw you. We won't vote the way you want.
Oh, yeah. When was the last time a Democratic or a Republican party did that?
I don't know. It'd be interesting, a research project. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now I think it'd be a pretty fast research project.
Yeah.
I don't think it's happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember Hillary Clinton when she debated Bernie Sanders saying, I've never taken a bribe. And Sanders says, Hillary, that's not the way it works, you know.
Yeah. Right. Oh, that's a good line. There's a system out there.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, when you talk about, you know, I was thinking, you know, in travels, you know, people talk about how countries are corrupt. And well, you know, if you get a ticket, you just pay somebody and then you don't get the ticket, you know, all of our corruption is constitutional. You know, you don't give an individual, you know, there's not that much corruption that you can buy your way out of a ticket. It's not like it doesn't exist, but that's not the main thing. The main thing is that the billionaires and the corporations buy the president, they buy the Congress, you know, and that's perfectly legal, but it's not called corruption. Of course, it's bribery. Of course.
Anything else you want to add to what you've said?
Well, I so admire Jill Stein.
Oh, campaign manager for Cornel West, right? Okay.
Yeah, well, she would have, she was a supporter of Cornel West's run, absolutely. And then when he left, I know, I mean, I talked with her even, but she did some soul searching. The Green Party has to run a presidential candidate in order to survive. There's no question about that. We also run local, but in order to run local, we have to have somebody running for president. That's what helps get the Green Parties on the ballot and the Green Parties organized state by state. It helps keep us in the news. There are four parties in this country that actually get on the ballot enough to be able to conceivably win, you know, mathematically, to be able to conceivably win. And those four parties are the two Titanics, the Democrats and the Republicans, and the Libertarians and the Green Party. They should be in the debates and the ballot access. I mean, you know that automatically the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are on the ballots on all the states. The other parties have to go through incredibly arduous money-taking and time-taking process to get on the ballots of all the states in order to just even be able to allow people to vote for a party such as the Green Party that has peace, justice, the environment, and real democracy without taking corporate money, in order to be able to vote for a party like that, that's sort of a no-brainer good idea.
Well, that, that's why one of the reasons people say, well, why should we vote for those parties, those third parties, because they don't have ballot access. They'll never win. We're throwing away our vote. You've heard it all before. And the political socialization process is very effective. People grow up, even apolitical people grow up thinking, well, there's only two parties. So that's a tremendous uphill battle you've got to fight. But you've been doing it, like you say, for 30 years, and you've been on the ballot, you've won local elections, so that's got to give you some hope, right?
Well, yeah, and I like personally, I refuse to quit
Yeah.
because just refuse, you know, because it's like because it's needed. It is what is needed. I could make the argument that the Green Party is the most successful or effective think tank, progressive think tank in the country, because we run candidates that put the word out and it gets out to people in various ways, despite the shutdown of the media, the green out, you know, of the media. But things like forgiving student debt, things like marriage equality, the things like
But do
legalizing.
you think that the Democrats are pushed to do that by groups like the Green Party and other more progressive groups because they have to incorporate that in order to attract votes?
Yeah, well, at least they incorporate the lip
Rhetoric.
service. Yeah, the rhetoric. But then some things happen. You know, like cannabis got legalized and it didn't seem like it was going to happen. People can marry whom they love and it didn't seem like that was going to happen, and it did. Reparations are something that we've been pushing as well. The Green New Deal, the real Green New Deal that incorporates foreign policy into the real Green New Deal. You cannot have a Green New Deal and have 50% of your discretionary budget go to the military. The worst thing for the environment is war. The absolute worst thing. And the military, even if they had the military and they were just doing their exercises without war. But unfortunately, they want to test these stupid things. The lethal, stupid is the wrong word. They're lethal, deadly, and destructive. So the Green Party, by push, public banking, you know, is something that people learn about because there is a voice at the table which is the Green Party. And so we're at the table, just, you know, that's a huge table with a whole bunch of people that have been sold out by, unfortunately, a lot of destructive corporations, not just corporations, but destructive. And then you have voices peeping out saying, Green New Deal, public banking. And then it's out there. I remember Kashama Sawant in Seattle, where she, when she was elected to the city council in the city of Seattle some years ago, maybe it was 10 years, and she wanted $15 an hour minimum, you know, wage in Seattle. Nobody else was wanted that. But there she was at the table talking about $15 an hour, and people get embarrassed into supporting it because they can't tell their constituents, they don't can't come up with a good enough reason to their constituents, and they're a little closer to their constituents than the president is to his. And so just the fact that she was pushing for it, one person, it happened. So we need to have these voices. We cannot silence ourselves.
That's Green Party activist Laura Wells speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on March 31st, 2024.